Move to sixth case today, USA versus Arnell. Ms. Garst.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Hannah Garst. I represent Defendant Appellant Juan Arnell in this appeal. We believe that the district court erred on two bases. First, when it accepted Mr. Arnell's guilty plea, even though the government failed to establish a factual basis on the conspiracy charge. And second, when it sentenced Mr. Arnell to 300 months imprisonment based on an improper application of the career offender guideline. Now, starting with the plea agreement, the factual basis set forward by the government spoke nothing of conspiracy, nothing of agreement, nothing of the defendant knowingly or intentionally entering into that agreement. Rule 11b3 requires that the court determine that a factual basis support the plea agreement before entering judgment on the plea itself.
And didn't the district court here do that, even if not at the colloquy? Because on the sentencing form, he indicates that he adopts the pre-sentence investigation report. It's just a check. It's not a very fulsome discussion of it, but there's a check, yes, accept the pre-sentence report. And if you can get to the pre-sentence report here, there certainly can be no question about a factual basis for this plea, right?
You're correct, Your Honor. The district court can at any time find a factual basis for the plea itself. Now, he may have checked it on, or did check it on, the sentencing report, but in no place during any of the sentencing proceedings itself did the district court ever make any note of the pre-sentence report, talking about any of the facts that were laid out in the pre-sentencing report, or even stating, I'm adopting the pre-sentence report itself.
You're correct about that, but I wonder where it says he has to do that. You know, why is it not enough for him to signal that he's adopting the pre-sentence report? And then we can turn to those facts and rely on them.
It seems for the factual basis, because it's so important that, you know, the government first meet its burden and show that it has some evidence of each element of the crime, that it seems important that the district courts specifically articulate on the record what it's relying on as a basis for the factual basis itself. And the district court did not do so here. So even if it checked it, there's still, the district court is not giving this court anything to rely on to say, I specifically looked at these allegations or these things that were included in the pre-sentence report itself in determining that the plea is valid and the factual basis does conclude that these elements have been met.
Now, if Mr. Arnell had objected to the, it seems to me, quite unsatisfactory recitation of the facts in the plea agreement, it would have been easy for the government to have fixed that at the trial. So why, since we're on plain error review at this point, and we can see that there's plenty of factual basis for this plea, why isn't that enough to defeat his appeal?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, clearly everyone did miss it, and it would have been better if he had objected to it. And at that point, I mean, the government would have the opportunity to correct that. But
I assume they would have come in with all this evidence. It seems like a fairly elaborate arrangement if one credits the pre-sentence report.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot in the pre-sentence report here. But on plain error review, we would just submit that because the government didn't do so in this case, I mean, this seems to be analogous to the government at trial proving its burden beyond a reasonable doubt of each element on the crime. And the government just didn't do so in this case as far as the factual basis is concerned. So we believe that the error would be plain in the fact that he was allowed to plead guilty to a charge that the government did not allege each element would affect his substantial rights and the fairness and integrity of the proceedings themselves of allowing a defendant to do so where the government has not met its I guess you could say, provided adequate support for the elements.
Well, you know, when you get back to the pre-sentence report and the fact that there was a check mark and indicated they considered it, and plain error review, what would you have the judge do if, even in a situation where he noticed it was, I shouldn't say defective because then he could have asked the government, but at least he's able to consider the other factors that are contained in the pre-sentence report, isn't he?
Well, we would just submit that the district court should specifically articulate on the record what they're relying on as the basis for the conspiracy charge. That the district court specifically lays out and says, I'm relying on the pre-sentence report and these facts laid out in the pre-sentence report as a basis for the charge of conspiracy.
Turning to your point about the sentence, it looked to me that Mr. Arenal had admitted himself that there was an excess of 100 grams of heroin.
Well, it seems that in the plea agreement itself, there is the statement that he understands and knows that he's being charged with 100 grams of heroin.
And that the government can prove that beyond a reasonable doubt.
And that the government can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. But again, we would say that the factual basis here is important because if he knows that there's 100 grams of heroin, so he knows and he understands what he's pleading to, but the government's, again, not providing any basis for the 100 gram of heroin.
But they don't need to if he's admitted. I mean, if once you admit to something, they don't need to trot out all of their evidence. In fact, again, as the pre-sentence report indicates, they could have done that, but once he's admitted the amount that's necessary, then sentencing can occur on that basis.
Well, we would assert that actually the pre-sentence report does not lay out enough evidence for the 100-gram requirement because in order for it to be the offense of conviction, we would assert that the drug amounts had to be within the indictment period itself, which was early December through December 15th, that because it was an career offender guideline, that relevant conduct really didn't come into play here. This was solely based on the offense of conviction. And even looking at the PSR and the paragraphs pointed out by the government, you still only arrive at the 56.7 grams of heroin. And if you add the only other calculated amount was an additional 4 grams in paragraph 12.
Your position is the relevant. There is no relevant conduct factor in this. It has to be the count of or the amount with regard to the conviction.
Yes, Your Honor. Because once they determined that the career offender guideline applied, it was unnecessary at all to look at relevant conduct because it's solely based on the statutory maximum sentence. If I may save the rest of my time.
You may. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jonathan Koenig appears on behalf of the United States. After hearing about all the problems with the terribly complex contract in the River East case, I'm not sure if I feel better or worse about my office's failure to articulate a detailed factual basis in this relatively straightforward plea agreement. But I would like to begin by acknowledging that that was a failure, and probably also it was the district judge failed to say some magic words to the effect of, I find that the facts set forth in the PSR support the plea. But the most significant failure, it seems to me, and as Judge Wood noted in her question, was the failure of the defendant to seek to withdraw from his plea, which means that the burden of persuasion is on him at the appellate level to establish not only that there was error, but that it would be a miscarriage of justice to let the plea stand. This court has said in Villarreal, Tamayo, and probably some other cases that it's excruciatingly difficult to meet the plain error burden in this context. And there are some good reasons for that. I won't go into all of them. They're articulated very well in the Driver case from this court and in the Dominguez-Benitez case from the Supreme Court. The question here is whether the defendant has met his burden. All of the facts that he claims ought to have been in the plea agreement were set forth in the pre-sentence report. There's no claim that the defendant would not have entered a guilty plea in the absence of the alleged Rule 11 errors. There's no claim that the defendant misunderstood the charge or couldn't comprehend what was going on. There's no claim of actual innocence. In fact, there's not even a suggestion that the defendant has a valid defense in this case. In short, like Driver and unlike Wetterlin, this is a plain error case,
Now, I'm correct, Mr. Koenig, am I not, that the defendant did raise a couple of objections to the pre-sentence report?
That is correct. As I recall, they weren't terribly material.
But it indicates, at any event, that they had read it, he and his lawyer had read it and thought about it enough to complain about a few things.
Yes, Your Honor.
So they knew what was in there.
And another salient point that emerges from the transcript of the sentencing hearing is that the district judge had clearly familiarized himself with the pre-sentence report. He alluded to specific neighborhoods where prior offenses had occurred, related them to his own history. He acknowledged the presence in the courtroom of the defendant's lawyer in a previous proceeding. It was very clear, it's very clear from the transcript that the judge was engaged and had familiarized himself with that pre-sentence report.
Yeah, except the problem there is the judge said too much. I mean, the judge went off on what he thought of communism and Castro and was talking about things that really, I don't think, had a lot to do with Mr. Arenal's offense.
Well, in fairness, I think he was trying to get at the seriousness of the offense and the effects of drug trafficking on the community, Your Honor. Beyond that, I won't try to defend what may have been extraneous remarks. But I would ask you to find that this is a plain error case that's governed by Driver and to decline the invitation to vacate the plea agreement.
With regard to the sentence, did you have any comment on your opponents that relevant conduct shouldn't be included in this?
I'm not sure I completely understood the argument, because as I read the PSR, there's far more than 56 grams when you add it all up. In fact,
she said it didn't relate to the count of conviction, and that's all it.
That argument is new to me here at oral argument this morning. I haven't had a chance to go through and read the PSR with that in mind. I'd be happy to submit additional briefing if you'd like.
I don't think that's necessary. I don't need it. That's fine.
Well, on that second point in her brief, I guess all I would say is, as Judge Wood acknowledged, there was an admission in the plea agreement itself. There was also a colloquy at pages 7 to 9 of the plea hearing about the need for the government to prove drug weight beyond a reasonable doubt. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Conan. Garst? You have 2.5 minutes, Ms.
I just have one comment about the sentencing. Even though he did admit to the knowledge of the fact that there was 100 grams of heroin, even though he understood what the government was charging him with, we still believe that the government has to provide some evidence of that 100-gram requirement. The reason why it's in the plea agreement in and of itself is because it's an 841B1B. It's going to increase the statutory max, which requires it to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. If it wasn't in there, then clearly the government doesn't have to provide any evidence of drug weight other than the drug itself existed. And we assert that they did not provide that, even just a hint of evidence, even amounting to the 100-gram requirement of heroin. The factual basis doesn't provide that. The PSR, even if this court decides to look at the PSR, again, does not provide that, and that's solely in response to the defendant's argument. I'm sorry, the government's argument that this court should look at the PSR for support for the 100-gram requirement. We just ask that you would vacate the plea or in the alternative to resentence Mr. Arenal on count one. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garson. Again, you've taken this by appointment of this court, and thanks for the representation of your client. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until 9:30.